How's it going, everybody? Brent Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio, July 23rd, 2026, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We got a lot of news to get into here today. And we're going to start off with some business news, WWE PLE numbers. How's it looking?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, the Netflix announced, their numbers for most of their shows. So it's actually, not just the PLE numbers, but they usually do this they have been doing it historically every 6 months. And recently they announced, I think they're going to do it once a year. So I don't know if this is the last time, if they won't do it again in January, or next year will be when they start doing it once a year and we'll get everything at the end of the year only rather than every 6 months. So this may be it for a year and getting the numbers, or we may get the numbers at the end of the year for the rest of the year. But the the basic gist is that the biggest pay-per-view of the year was Royal Rumble, like last year. The numbers were generally up, even though I think overall popularity is down. But the thing is that there's about 17% more homes that get WWE programming on Netflix. So with that, it's not like you would expect a 17% increase in these numbers. I don't know what the expected increase would be, but it should be, I think it should be like at least half that, so probably at least 8%. And there are some shows that are up, and there are some shows that are up more than that, and there are some shows that are down. There are some shows that are equal. Overall, the Royal Rumble, it was the number one show, beating both nights of WrestleMania again, like it did last year. And even on Netflix, when it comes to replay shows from previous years, I haven't studied it that closely yet for this year, but for the last 6 months. But I've glanced at it, and the Royal Rumbles do better than WrestleManias as far as rewatching goes as well. For whatever reason on Netflix, and this has been the case since they got it, the Royal Rumble's always been the number one show of the year. Like I said, 3.1 million, which is up from 3 million last year as far as views go. You probably would figure, 1.5, 1.6 homes per. So we were probably talking 4.5 to 4.7 million viewers. This is only outside the United States. Does not include what would have been the ESPN numbers. So, it was up. All things considered, I would say, given that I don't think WWE is as popular, and I don't think most people think it's as popular as it was a year ago, the fact that it's not down, it's not going to be down with the big increase in number of homes. But the fact that it's not, that it's up a little bit, I think is overall kind of good, Elimination Chamber was the same, 1.9 million, which again, if you remember last year, they had Dwayne on the show and John Cena going for the, going to win the chamber to win the thing. So, it was a lot stronger last year than this year. So being even, I considered this one, this was like more built around Punk, I think. I considered this one to be, what was the thing? Was Punk and Finn Balor on that show? Hold on, let me just get my notes here. Let's see here. So I got it right here. Where are we? Chamber. Last year we had the Cena going after it, Dwayne Johnson appearing on the show announced at the last minute. This year the big thing was Punk against Finn Balor and the two chamber matches. So I thought last year was a stronger attraction, but they were even. But again, it should be in theory, it should be up. WrestleMania, first night was up, 2.4 million to 2.7 million. This was a 12% increase, which is still below the 16.8% gain, but it was the strongest increase of any show and probably a better increase than should be expected. And that's, this year, it was Rhodes and Randy Orton as the main event. Last year, I thought, it was Rollins, Roman Reigns, and Punk in the three-way and Gunther and Jey Uso. So being up, I consider that one a good one. The day two also went up, from 2.8 million to 3 million. Last year they had, Cody Rhodes and John Cena, and the Rhea Ripley, Io Sky, and Bianca Belair match. This year you had, what did you have this year? That was last year. This year was Punk and Roman and Brock Lesnar and Obafemi. Backlash was the one. Backlash was down. This year did 1.4 million with Roman Reigns and Jacob Fatu and Seth Rollins and Braun Breaker. Last year did 1.5 with Cena and Orton and Gunther and Pat McAfee. So basically it says that Cena and Orton was substantially bigger than Roman Reigns and Jacob Fatu, if you want to do a comparison. The Clash this year was up 23% from last year, which I would have expected. It did 1.6 million versus last year's 1.3 million. So that's actually the biggest increase of anything, and it's well above the gain in homes, and it's Roman Reigns and Jacob Fatu, the Tribal Combat match, and Cody and Gunther. Last year we had Rollins, Punk, Jey Uso, LA Knight, Cena and Logan Paul, and Roman Reigns and Bronson Reed. So this was a more attractive lineup, and it did a lot better. Night of Champions was equal last year. They both did a million, so by far the lowest. Last year was Roman Reigns and Gunther, and this year was Roman Reigns, Gunther, and Sami Zayn, and Obafemi and Jey Uso, Liv Morgan and Io Sky. The cage match with Seth and Braun Breaker. So, it's the lowest by far of the year. So was last year. Last year was Cody and Randy Orton in the King of the Ring final. Cena Punk was a stronger, I think that was the stronger main event, but that's probably why it was equal. So that's that. The interesting, another interesting thing when it comes to Netflix is that SmackDown was way up this year. It was up 26% from last year. At the same time, U.S. television ratings for SmackDown have gone down significantly. I'm not exactly, again, a lot of that increase is because far more homes have access to WWE. However, Raw has not shown an increase. In fact, Raw is actually down year to year, whereas SmackDown is way up, and way up well above the increase in homes. So for whatever reason, and it's a weird one, because again, it's like US is down, so it's not there you go. Now NXT, the NXT does not really do well at all on Netflix. I mean, way worse than on CW here. They're doing, I think that the shows go from about, they're probably ranging from about 116,000 to 173,000 views. So like I said, you can multiply that by 1.5 and get a real number. But as far as total viewers, that's obviously much lower than just the United States alone on CW, but CW is a network station. And the one that they just did, which would have been the Great American Bash Show, head-to-head with Forbidden Door, it did 87,000 views, which is by far, just as it was the lowest TV rating that NXT has done ever in the United States, this was, in fact, the lowest number on Netflix that NXT has ever done for a live show. This was the one that went head-to-head with Forbidden Door. This is exactly what we predicted. It happened exactly as we said. They're continuing that strategy. Obviously, they consider this getting the lowest numbers, as long as it hurts AEW, a viable strategy. I get why, but I mean, it's like, so you can say, but the reality is that when you go head-to-head with comparison, they get killed. The Bash is supposed to be, it's a PLE. It's supposed to be bigger than a regular show. And it does it did half of what a regular weekly Tuesday show would do on Netflix as far as total. And on CW, it was you know, I mean, it was a little more than half, but not much. It was just it was just a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it was more than half, but still, it was the lowest one ever. So that's like the main stuff. I mean, there's it's kind of a mixed bag. I'd say pay-per-views, you know, I mean, it's not like there's a collapse in interest in the pay-per-views. They're holding their own. I mean, overall, you know, they probably should be up more other than Clash and the first day of Mania. SmackDown was a success. I mean, going up is, I mean, up significantly, and NXT is what it is, and going head-to-head with AEW for NXT is a disaster as far as numbers, and there's no reason to believe that that will not be the case on August 30th as well. If not worse, because AEW's got a stronger show than Forbidden Door, and I don't even think it matters what NXT puts on. You know, they're going to be on, especially in the afternoon on CW. But like I said, it's WWE's strategy. It's you know, we're in the most important time in the history of AEW, and I mean, they're very willing to get, obviously, they're very, very willing to just throw AAA and NXT into no-win situations if it can even dent AEW. I mean, it, you know, that and, you know, the other moves that they've made as far as the live shows. I mean, it's, the strategy is there. They can survive it. They don't have to win. They're going in, you know, it's essentially NXT and AAA. It's essentially a suicide mission. With the hopes that maybe we knock a little, maybe we knock 5% off of the other guys, and maybe that's enough to where, wherever, you know, when it comes time to negotiate the contracts, that 5% will somehow make a difference, and AEW won't get as much money on their new deal, or maybe not even get a new deal. I mean, that's the game that's being played. I don't think 5%, if it's even that it's going to hurt. And I can tell you, on August 30th, I mean, August 30th, AEW, All In, is going to do a giant number. I mean, this weekend show, probably no. But August 30th is going to do a giant number. And, you know, they can throw whatever they want. That's, the NXT show will do, I'm almost certain the NXT show head-to-head will do worse, and the AAA show will do worse than the NXT show, most likely, because it's a YouTube show. So, that's, you know, I mean, that's the lay of the land.
All right, J.P. Morgan.
Yeah, let me get my notes. So there was a really interesting thing. J.P. Morgan came out with its analysis of TKO business. And it is the first time that I have ever seen analysis that talks about unhappiness with WWE Creative and... essentially, that let me get to it. It talks about unhappiness with the WWE Creative, and I don't have the paper with me, but they basically said that, you know, when they were analyzing the stock and the quarterly conferences on August the 3rd, and they came up with a lot of different details. They were downgrading it a little bit, although still they feel it's the stock should be higher. But one of the things that they were talking about is the idea that they have seen complaints about WWE Creative and the soft sales of SummerSlam. What is an indication that they have looked into in feeling the weakness of WWE Creative, and it was considered, you know, a negative as far as, you know, things to look out for. I think that they were a little bit concerned about, you know, the Zuffa Boxing really not getting off with a bang. And the Zuffa Boxing show, which is Sunday at the theater in Madison Square Garden, I mean, from what I gather, they've been, you know, they've been comping tickets and $40 tickets for boxing in New York and things like that. And it's considered they're not close in the theaters. You know, obviously they could, you know, it's like 4,000 seats. So, there is, you know, there's that, and also the feeling that there was a lot of excitement when it came to you on the UFC side, and that, you know, the excitement is over because, you know, the White House show has come and gone, and apparently the costs of the White House show were were more than they had expected. And so it hurts the profit margin of on the UFC side is going to be down because they did a show with no ticket sales and with an incredible amount of expense. Obviously, the mentality behind it was is that all the publicity they got from that show will benefit them in the long run. And it's unclear if that's the case. I mean, the McGregor fight did what it did. I didn't see, you know, which that was the next big show. So if there was like this big increase as far as interest in UFC, the McGregor fight would have shown it. I felt that the McGregor numbers were, maybe a little lower than expected. At best, even. Certainly not up. Not up from what I would have expected. So, I don't see that this White House show did any long-term boost to UFC. It got them a hell of a lot of media publicity, but the idea that media publicity is supposed to be to and that helps in sponsorships and things like that, no doubt. But as far as like growth of fan interest, I have not noticed a growth in fan interest in UFC coming off of that show. I mean, it was a great show. It was also a polarizing show as far as the show itself. You know, the McGregor show, it was the other one that they were looking forward to. It's come and gone. Now there's nothing on the UFC, you know, agenda coming up that anyone's really excited about. You know, I mean, their money's guaranteed and all that. It's not, and they got a fantastic, fantastic deal. But, you know, that's kind of where that stands. But, yeah, they said that there's uncertainty with WWE Creative. And I'll tell you what, when the analysts start talking about WWE Creative, it's a different ballgame. You know, WWE has, you know, their big thing is always like, we don't listen to this stuff, which they do, obviously. You can see by, you know, the over and over and over again how they change plans based on stuff that they supposedly don't listen to. And, you know, so that's the reality. But when, you know, in the Wall Street, you know, when it comes to Wall Street, they have never in the past paid attention to complaints about creative. And the fact that they are talking about that's a huge thing when it comes to TKO, because it means that they're going to have to be a lot more, they're going to have to address the issue probably with those market people. Whether they'll do it at the conference call or not will be very interesting if they even bring it up. But individually, they're going to have to do that and say, no, it's everything's fine. And before, they've never had to. So this is a big one. It's a big one to watch. And unfortunately, when stuff like this happens, it usually leads to, sometimes it leads to good stuff. You know, your back's against the wall and you got to do stuff. Often it leads to panicked reactions. We'll see which one this leads to, but it's going to lead to something without a doubt.
All right, a bunch of wrestling news here. Sammy Guevara.
What have you heard?
Well, I can tell you what I think happened.
Okay.
Well, this weekend, Sammy posted on his Twitter new bio, and then somebody saw him say new bio, and they looked at his bio, and there was no AEW in the bio. And I guess they said he'd removed it from his bio. And so then everybody thought that he had quit, or he got his release, or his contract was up, or something. He wasn't answering any questions. And then more people got talking. And as it turns out, his contract has not expired. He has not been released. Nothing has changed. And I was told that AEW had never been in his bio. So when he said new bio and people looked at his bio and saw that it had been removed, it actually never been there in the first place.
So with it, that tells me he was doing this all as a publicity stunt.
I don't think he did anything. I think what happened was he changed his bio. Everybody decided he was leaving. He decided, I'll go with it.
Well,
and then
here's the thing, though. It would be very easy, especially for a guy as active on social media as he is, and, you know, people know him and everything, for to just say, hey, there's nothing to it. And he did not.
I know, but I think that once, I think he didn't, what I'm saying is, I don't think he did it on purpose.
But he's going with it.
I think he's going with it. He went with it once everyone started talking about how he had removed it and what's going on with Sammy. Is he leaving? Is he, So I think he went with it there.
So you think at this point it's just a publicity stunt, and he's just being quiet, thinking that because of that, the more he's quiet, the more people will talk, which is actually true.
I presume so. I just know for sure his contract has not expired. He has not been released, and apparently nothing has changed. So
I can tell you that I have asked many people who need to know, and none of them got back to me, including Sammy. Mm. But it's not just Sammy, so I find that kind of interesting.
Well, I did hear from people that also should probably know, and they said that nothing has changed. So
no one said anything's changed. They're just like some. I mean, I guess I probably will find out by the end of the week, maybe tomorrow actually, because Tony's got a conference thing tomorrow, and I would suspect that someone will ask. Might even be me. We'll just ask about Sammy. And we'll see what he says, because he's got a thing for the redemption things tomorrow afternoon.
Maybe you can ask him about Bailey too.
He can't speak about Bailey.
What's going on with Bailey?
The only thing that I was told is that she has a big decision to make.
And well, that tells you everything you need to know. Then her deal's coming up.
Well, it's not coming up for months. But I mean, like again, like you know, I watched that show on Saturday, and I mean my. Watching that show, I thought it was a blow off. You know, the stuff that Lyra Valkyria has said since makes it sound like a blow off. Maybe she's going to come back in 2 weeks and attack Lyra and keep the thing going. I've seen this. I mean, if you remember when Ricochet was leaving, because with Ricochet, I don't say it's the exact same situation, because if I say it's the exact same situation, everyone's going to go, oh, well, he left and she's leaving. But, with Ricochet, when he had not signed his new deal, and when he kept not signing his deal, they started assuming he was gone. There were even stories out that he was gone before he decided he was gone. But he was leaning to being gone, and in fact, in the end, he was gone. But if you remember that last angle that they did with him, it was done in a way where if he signed his contract, it was going to lead to a return.
Yes. You know,
based on that angle.
Yes.
So this could be the exact same thing.
I think this is the exact same thing. If she ends up re-signing, then there's a built-in angle with Lyra. And if she doesn't re-sign, Lyra destroyed her and sent her out of the company. So I think that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, well, she's got to, you know, I would think, you know, and this is not knowing anything. You can, and Tony, she's under contract. He can't say anything anyway. But I would think that if she was a free agent, that she would be able to get a shot there, because they certainly are.
Well, of course.
Yeah, they're, well, not every, you know, there's people.
Mercedes has been tweeting about.
Yeah, I mean, Mercedes obviously is going to want her there. They're best friends. And that's why I say I think that there's a really good chance that she would get an offer from AEW if she was a free agent. Now, I think there's
no chance that she would not get an offer. I'm talking zero chance.
You're probably right because of Mercedes. You're probably right. I mean, even like the thing is, I mean, again, now getting an offer and everything, it's like, I don't know her mentality, because there's obviously many different mentalities, and many of them end up backfiring on AEW, and many of them don't. And you just never know. You know, I mean, we just age, you know, you know, just literally, like, what was it, 2 days ago, said, my heart was never into it. I'm a WWE girl. And it's like, when you have that mentality, I mean, it's not going to be good. And there are people, you know, there are people that have that mentality. I mean, Stephanie Vaquer, you know, got a much better money offer from AEW than she got from WWE. But, you know, she grew up watching WWE. Bailey grew up going to WWE shows in San Jose and the Bay Area all the time. Now, she also went through the indie scene, but, you know, so it's Stephanie Vaquer. You know, and she went through CMLL. So it's not like all they know, like some of the athletes that come through, You know, like the a lot of the athletes that come through, when they get cut by WWE, you know, they just quit the business. Or, you know, it's not like they grind through and hope that AEW will pick them up. They're just done. They only know WWE. They don't even know, you know what I mean? They just think everything else is Bush League besides that. I don't think that she would think that, especially with Mercedes there doing so well. But that doesn't mean, it's like, again, everyone's attitude is different. There have been many, many people that AEW has hired in this type of situation that have flopped, and there have been many that have been big successes. And in the end, there's you know, the key things, number one is your attitude. If you're doing it to go back to WWE and make them notice you, it's a bad move for Tony to sign you. And again, how's he going to know? Because everyone, when they talk, is going to say, oh, I'm gung-ho for you. I mean, even the people who mentally, obviously, very clearly never wanted to be there, they all said that. And some of them, you know, are, you know, some of them are on the market again, like tomorrow. There's a lot of people on the market tomorrow, by the way. And that will be interesting, because again, we got Forbidden Door and in Montreal, and I mean, not Forbidden
Redemption.
Door. We got Redemption in Montreal on Sunday, and there could be surprises, because you got that list of people. Now, Sheamus isn't one of them. He's not going to be free for a while, I don't think. But you know, the Malakai Black and Zelina Vega, Jeff Cobb, you know, Motor City Machine Guns, Santos, Escobar. I mean, you've seen the list. You know, I mean, so I would say almost everyone on that list, he's probably thought about and can bring some of them in. And again, you know, I think the people who are, you know, the key, I think, to the people who make it in AEW are the ones who, in their minds, look at it as a chance to do better matches. If you look at it as WWE's pro wrestling, I'm going to the number two company, and I know more than they know, and I know how to work, and they don't know how to work, it will be very, very, it will not be fun for anyone involved. And there are many people who have done that. So, you know, again, you know, when it comes to Pam, you know, it's like, I don't know what her mentality is. I mean, she's been a fan since she's, I don't even know how, 11 years old, 12 years old, you know. I mean, very, very young, used to go to fan fests, you know, the whole thing, right? So, I don't know if her whole life is WWE or her whole life is professional wrestling, and those are two different lives. And also, life after professional wrestling. I mean, she's 37. Obviously, she's been doing training stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if she wants to do a wrestling school down the line. I kind of expect that she would. I don't know. I've never, you know, never heard that, but I mean, all indications are that she would, is that's probably what she would want to do. There's a lot of other speculation of what she would want to do after wrestling. And that's a consideration, too, when it comes to this. You could also go in there and go, at this age, if I don't make a move now, I'll never make the move. So it's kind of like, do I stay now? Like, you know, your mentality at 37 is different than it's going to be at 30. It will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, I don't see WWE like getting in a bidding war over her. I think that, you know, obviously the way she's been booked, I just don't see that. I mean, I could be wrong though. Maybe, you know, like with Natalya, I mean, they did not want to lose her for, you know, I think pretty obvious reasons. You know, her winning the Owen Hart Cup is a great, great story, you know, and they didn't want that story. And, you know, they don't use her, but they pay her, you know, they pay her and they let her do her indies and everything like that with Bayley. You know, there's, again, they may just not want to lose her. I don't know.
All right, let's do the G1 update.
Okay, so how much have you watched?
Nothing yet.
Oh, okay, so I have watched both nights from Sapporo, and so I'm behind a couple days. But I did watch, there's two matches I want to bring up, and they both involve Zack Sabre Jr. They're awesome matches. So this is the Sapporo match with Zack Sabre Jr. and Yuji Uemura, which I think is the best match, at least that I have seen in the tournament. It's actually, from a technical wrestling standpoint, start to finish, just technical wrestling is the best match I've seen all year. It's one of those matches where, again, it's all wrestling. And if it's a match that you're kind of like going to watch half-hearted, you're not going to really get into it. This is one that you got to concentrate on because it's all about moves on the mat. And if you're concentrating really close, the match is like I said, phenomenal. One of the things, it reminded me of like Vern Gagne, Billy Robinson, or Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr. when I was a kid, because these guys were just out there. Just actual wrestling is so tiring. And it's like these guys, you watch them do long matches, both of them. And, they're fine and everything. In this match, these guys are heaving. Probably Uemura more than Zach. And, but even the announcers go, my God, these guys are just, like about 15, 20 minutes in, they are just dying out there because they are wrestling. But, it actually adds to the match. It's a phenomenal technical match. So that was the other. And the one today was Zach and Callum Newman, and almost as good, maybe right in the same ballpark. Fantastic match, and Callum Newman won that match with a cradle like out of nowhere. That was it was a simple cradle, and you'd go like, that's not a very exciting finish. If you watch the setup of it, it is one of the great setup. It was one of the great finishes of the year. I mean, just. You just have to see it. That's all I'll say. The finish itself. The match is great. Let me see where we are. Today's show was Nagaoka. It was B-Block. And it was Gabe Kidd beat Aaron Wolf. Hanare beat Oscar. Drilla Maloney beat Yuya Uemura, which I heard was a great match, which not surprised me. And yesterday in Sendai? Yesterday in Sendai, which I also did not see, Jake Lee beat Hirooki Goto, and this comes right after Goto had beaten Yota Tsuji. Ryohei Oiwa beat Great Okan. Takeshita beat Yuto Ice, which I probably am going to try to watch as soon as possible. Sanada beat Yota Tsuji, which means that Goto and Sanada have both beaten Tsuji, and both of them will probably be probably be in line for championship matches. And then Oleg Bolton beat Shingo Takagi, which I heard was fantastic. No surprise. So A-Block right now, it's almost Goto, Oiwa, Jake Lee, Takeshita, and Oleg Bolton all have two wins. Tsuji, Yuta Ice, Takagi, Great Okan, and Sonata all have one win. So, that's where they are. Block B, Callum Newman and Drilla Maloney, Gabe Kidd, and Hanari are all at 6 points, but they also have the Shota Umino forfeit wins. And then at 4 points, also with those wins, is Oscar, Aaron Wolf, Uemura, and Rin Narita. Zach at 2 points. So he's actually in next to last place because, Umino's going to end up with zero. But people have told me it's the best G1 in years, and Every match I've seen, I would say, even the Sonata stuff. And I heard Sonata's match with Tsuji was really good. Sonata, it's like physically he doesn't look good, but his wrestling is pretty decent. I mean, Jake Lee's probably, the weak link in some ways, but his matches have been okay. Wouldn't go farther than okay. They've been okay. And then on the other side, I mean, obviously Aaron Wolf's green. Watching the Aaron Wolf match that I saw, it is fun to watch. It's like his greenness kind of works for him because it's like he can do some things really well, like the judo, and he's got the that realism factor that really helps you in Japanese wrestling, the same thing that Oleg Bolton had. Oleg Bolton, when he was super, super green, he still would kind of get that feel, you know, and you would watch him and go like, he's a future world champion. Don't beat him too much, you know, and treat him good because he's got something, even though he's super, super green. And I think Aaron Wolf's the same way. I would say Bolton, I think, was better, quicker, but Wolf does have some natural fire that Bolton did not have because Wolf grew up as a wrestling fan and Bolton did not. Bolton certainly looks the part and can do really cool things. But the fact that Aaron Wolf is a Japanese gold medalist, in the long run, I think puts him ahead of the game. I mean, as long as he progresses in a couple of years, he's going to be a world champion just because he's a celebrity. And as long as he's decent. If he's terrible, probably no. But he's had at least one great match in a very short career, which was Yoshihashi. And I presume when he starts working with some of these guys here that he's going to have some very good matches as well.
All right, CMLL.
Let me get the card here. So, nothing big. I should point out, we'll talk about this later when it comes to the Redemption show and the ladder match and all that.
Yeah.
But, they I don't know exactly what the explanation is. There's like some explanation that, you know, Mystico was going to not be there or something, but Mystico was never advertised, and Mystico's not going to be there. Now, when it comes to Grand Slam Mexico, which is only a week away, my impression is that Mystico is going to be on that show. Whether he will, I presume he will wrestle. They obviously did that angle, and him doing anything on Sunday on the Redemption show would be too early after doing that angle. But I think he's going to be Grand Slam Mexico. I was given the impression he's going to be doing the Grand Prix on that Friday, you know, in the 22-man match. I know that when he was injured, the announcers were talking about, in Mexico, they were talking about, oh my God, he may miss the Grand Prix. I think he's going to be in the Grand Prix. I can't say that for sure. You know, it's all a decision-making thing, but I think that I was given the impression he's working Grand Slam Mexico. The other thing on Grand Slam Mexico is Kenny Omega was put on the poster. He was on the poster last year and did not appear, but he was just put on the poster this week. So he should appear. He's in a big storyline right now. Unlike last year where he kind of didn't have a storyline, so there was no real reason for him to appear other than obviously the Mexican fans really wanted to see him in Arena Mexico since he'd never been there. He had been obviously with AAA and he was world champion in AAA. So there was a lot of interest in him, you know, coming to the cathedral for the first time. I think that he will, I mean, they advertised him. He really should be there. They haven't advertised Adam Copeland, which is interesting because that's the other guy that, when it comes to Arena Mexico, those fans, from what I gather, want to see the most just because, you know, he's a major, major star in Mexico, and he's never been in Arena Mexico. And, they saw him on WWE television. He's wrestled there in the past, at other arenas and all that. So I don't know. He's not on the poster, and that's that. So let me just see if I have this thing. Where is the stuff? I have so many notes here. Okay, so this looks like Arena Mexico for Friday. They are having, this is the weird one, so it's the Leyenda de Plata. It's a 10-man match. There will be no winner of this match. They will end, it's an elimination match. And when there are two men left, the match ends. And those two men will have a singles match on July the 31st, which is a big pay-per-view show on MyAEW. That's a pretty loaded show. So the people in the match are Commander Titan, Templario, Mascara Dorada, Neon, Angel de Oro, Volador Jr., Guerrero Maya Jr., Capitan Suicida, and Calavera Jr. Uno, number one. And It sounds like some kind of an awesome match. I mean, it really does, and it'll probably be a long one since it's an elimination match and everything. So the other top stuff, it's they're doing Dragon Rojo Jr. and Cavernario in a singles match. They've been feuding for a while. There's a women's trios, Tessa Blanchard, Gara Negra, and Sky Day against Reina. Is it Reina? No, Kyra, Persephone, and Reina Isis, which is basically more to build up Tessa and Persephone, because they're going to be doing a singles match for the CMLL title on the 31st. And then Dragon Legendario and Dragon de Fuego against the Viano brothers, Viano Tresero brothers. That is one that I am very interested in because, like I think I've mentioned before, Dragon Legendario is like, people, when I was down there, they're just going like, this guy's amazing. This guy's amazing. You got to see him. So I saw him Saturday night and, you know, he's in a long trios match and he was not in much. He would come in and everything he would do would look like incredible. You know, just going like, oh my God, right? Then he'd be out of there and he'd be selling on the floor for minutes at a time and all this, and he'd come in and be incredible again. But he's not in much. So I think that there may be a reason he's not in much, in the sense of, you know, he's not as good when you see him a lot, but that's just a theory I had watching the match. But as far as in spots and everything, oh my God, the guy's incredible in spots. And, you know, the Viano brothers or Viano Tesoro brothers are obviously getting a big push. So that's an interesting one to watch. So pretty good. And then the following week, it's Tessa Persephone, India Sue and Thunder Rosa for the Mexican National. Hechicero is defending the world title, which I'll probably talk about later. And I don't know the opponent yet. And then whoever the last two guys are in that match. And, I mean, it could be, let's see, looking through this list. Commander, I'd say, is a possibility. Templario, maybe. Dorada, good chance. Titan, I mean, Titan's awesome. There's a chance. Neon, I could see. Angel De Oro, maybe. Volador, I hope not, but he's like a big star, so there's a chance. Guerrero Maya Jr., I say no. Suicida, I say no. Calavera, no. So whatever the singles match is, it's probably going to be a good one.
All right, before we get to Dynamite, Andreas Hale.
What do you want to say? Andreas Hale was let go in the massive releases by ESPN. He was up. I mean, it's interesting because it's not like he was let go, you know, like just whatever. I mean, they let a lot of people go in this round of firings, and he was one of them. I don't think it was necessarily, you know, because of WWE, but I do know that they were asked if, you know, him giving a C or whatever it was to that WrestlePalooza played a part, and nobody said no, which was really kind of weird. But I mean, it, you know, the deal that happened with him was, you know, he gave a C to that WrestlePalooza show. And obviously, I mean, he was told by ESPN. I mean, when they got WWE, I just remember that thing at that media call. And they go like, it will not affect the coverage on the website of professional wrestling at all. It's separation of church and state. And when I heard that, it was just like, and people were writing that. And I'm going like, this is bullshit. I know this business way too good. This is total bullshit. Well, Andreas gave him a C. And what happens, you know, he's told he can't give letter grades to any more WWE shows. That is the fact that happened. You know, I mean, I know that my style of journalism is dead. I know all that, telling the truth and all that and trying to be fair. It's all dead. I get it. But still, I mean, the person who makes that decision, and says that, I mean, they can't look in the mirror. They can't. There's no way they can look themselves in the mirror. That is such bullshit. But it happened. You know, UFC never complained. And he did the same thing for them and still did that. you know, afterwards. They never complained if he said a bad show was a bad show. So that was kind of the thing. From that point on, WWE would not, you know, give him any interviews. They would do interviews with ESPN, not with him. He was denied credentials at WrestleMania this year in Vegas, and which, you know, for an ESPN writer, now WWE has, you know, WWE's story is that he applied too late. I don't know, you know. You always make exceptions. Obviously, they didn't want to make exceptions. Maybe they were going to deny him. You know, who knows? If they were going to deny him anyway, they're not going to tell me. You can always make exceptions, and ESPN's a powerful enough outlet, especially since your PLE shows are on there, that you do make that exception, but they didn't. And then, I mean, I think there's a couple of really interesting things, just in the last short period of time. He wrote three interesting stories. Number one is before the Conor McGregor fight. So this is like his last big story. At least the last one that I read. He's probably written something since. But he wrote basically the time. His story was the timeline of Conor McGregor between the sexual assaults, to an extent the drug testing. It's similar to what I wrote, but it's obviously in a bigger outlet. And it was really well done. So, you got a guy doing good work. And I don't think there's any blowback there because, you know, UFC is not on ESPN anymore. So you can do real journalism on UFC and you're not going to get a blowback at that point. When they were on, you know, it's a different story. But even then, the people who run UFC, I don't think that they would complain about factual stuff like that. I mean, some people think they would. I see people all the time going, like, if you don't kiss up to them, you know, they're not going to give you the time of day. I don't know. There's reasons that maybe I was different from other people because I've always had no problems with UFC. But also, you know, I was there from the start. Several of the vice presidents, you know, especially before, were readers growing up. Dane and I have known each other for 25 years. So, you know, we have our fights, but not any in a long, long time. But I've never had any issues, you know, as far as like if I print something, you know, I mean, you know, they may yell about it, but, you know, banning or whatever, no. He did the story on the Janelle Grant case not too long ago, which shocked me because I didn't think ESPN would print that, and they obviously did. And then the big one was the story he did on Darby Allin. And, of course, for a long time, ESPN would not cover AEW. And that has nothing to do with the... This happened before the signing of the WWE deal. So it is not the WWE deal tells them you can't, you know, you're not going to cover AEW. It, after the deal was signed, would they, you know, they didn't cover AEW. Well, he did that big story on Darby. It was also, again, this was an outstanding story. The Darby story was an outstanding story. So it's like you do great work and then they let you go. So the thing with that is like, not only was it a great story, but I mean, AEW promoted it on their television and they have never done that with any story from any outlet ever that I can recall. Tony at one of the press conferences just put over this, you know, Andreas Hale story on Darby. And I mean, it was like, I mean, they, again, They've never even done that before. So anyway, he was cut the other day.
All right, we got Dynamite to get into here, and then we got to talk about Redemption, which is coming up on Sunday.
I've got to go through ratings real quick too. Raw on Monday, from the early notes, looked a little bit below average as far as the number. You know, that's pretty much it. You know, this was the first week with no competition. In a couple of weeks, 2 weeks ago, it was the show against the World Cup, but you did have the Punk match and the title win by Punk, which, as we noted last week, that did it. They didn't do a very good first day, but they did pick it up as the week went on. And then this last week's show was the one against Home Run Derby, and you know, the live and same day was lower than usual, 721. Overall, they were about 2.8 million worldwide viewers for Raw, which is, you know, it's lower than average, but, you know, I mean, again, with the Home Run Derby, it hurt them. It hurt them. So that was the basic gist there as far as the Raw goes. Collision did 399,000, 0.06. It was not tough competition, you know, obviously compared to some of the Saturdays of late. There was a UFC, but it wasn't a big UFC. There was WNBA and NBA, you know, and Major League Baseball. I did not see the quarters. I would not be surprised. When I watched the show, which is a very good wrestling show, I mean, like Jack Perry and Nick Wayne had a good match. And I mean, almost every match was good. But they put Sheeta and Queen Aminata on last. And I thought, like, I wouldn't have put them on last. I mean, I know why he did. And it's one of those things where, and you know, you see it after every show. It's like, you get, you know, and WWE got it a lot on Monday because they had very little women's stuff and no matches on the show on Monday. And, you know, it's a lot of complaints. No women, no women, no women. You know, I mean, there's a flip side of this, which is I looked at, like, every month, at the end of the month, look at all the YouTube views, which kind of is a good thing of saying, like, what's over, what's not over, what are people watching in specific. If you don't get quarter hours, it's the best breakdown that you can get. And for both companies, I mean, you rarely see anything women related in the top 25. You might see one, you know, every now and then. There, you know, Mercedes might make it. If Rhea Ripley was around, she might make it. Usually low. I mean, it's the people who you would expect, you know, on both sides. You know, I mean, on WWE, it's Lesnar and Obafemi, and it's Roman Reigns, and it's Punk, and it's Cody, and it's Seth a little lower. But it's, you know, you can kind of see the stars and the pecking order of what people really care about, and it's not the women. At the top level. I'm not saying they don't care at all, or that they should not book them. I'm not saying that at all. On the AEW side, it's the same thing. But I do think, and we've seen it several times of late, where, you know, actually on Dynamite on Wednesday and on Collision on Saturday, he had women's matches on last in both cases. And I think that that's the thing of trying to, you know, I mean, everyone reacts to complaints, you know, and when you hear about we don't listen, it's like, I will tell you, everyone listens all the time, and they will never sell it, but they do. And this is a perfect example. He put those two main events on because, you know, just felt that it would alleviate complaints. But I think that you know, Sheeta and Aminata as the main event of a two-hour show, it's, you know, I mean, it was not the best choice, but I get the choice and I get the reasons, and I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying that I do think that the number, if a different match was the last one, I do think the number would have been up a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit, because I could just see a lot of people tuning out when that's the last match on the show. You know, so I mean, it was a good show, though. Then it was Friday SmackDown, 1,242,000 viewers, 0.21. 0.21 is a low number, and it was not. The 1,242 is solid, you know, especially when you consider this current rating system that we're using. Not bad at all, but you know, low in 18 to 49 for whatever reason. And not big competitions compared to other weeks. I mean, we've got soccer, summer league, NBA. I mean, that's not any competition. So that's kind of where it stood for that show. So there you go.
All right. So AEW opened up with Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay doing a promo backstage, and they're doing the old frenemies deal, and then Moxley walks in and mentions there's no tension in the room. So that led to the six-man main event of the show. We had Kevin Knight and Darby Allin TNT title, and in fact, Kevin Knight won, and they teased him using the belt after the referee took a bump, but Darby ended up avoiding it, and they kind of went back and forth a little bit, and then Kevin just cut him off, hit the coast-to-coast dropkick, UFO splash, and won. Well, so Darby won clean.
Darby had a chance to use the belt and refused, you know, whereas with Kevin, it was kind of like he tried, but he got thwarted. I mean, Darby has the belt, and it's just kind of like, well, fuck it. You know, I can win, but I don't want to win that way. Obviously, Kevin had to win. You know, I mean, it's...
Well, the point here is that he is a weak challenger going into the pay-per-view, and they gave him essentially a clean win over Darby Allin.
Over a guy who was just recently the world champion.
So and I don't think that there's anybody that thinks that he's actually going to win Sunday. I don't think there's one AEW fan, but they are trying. And I give them credit for that.
It was the right booking to do if you're going to do it. Whether it's the right match, you know. I mean, I'm watching the show, and I mean, I thought they did a great job last week of building the match, considering, you know, it was, how would I say it? It was just kind of like a match that I would not have thought to be a pay-per-view main event. And then watching the show today, it was kind of like the thing in my head was, especially, you know, watching, it's like, I know that, you know, they were in a bind because the pay-per-view main event got moved up, and so you got to do something. And you're not gonna, when you spent like months, and I mean this thing has been built up for months, that Montreal Kenny Omega beats MJF. Did you see the thing about on TSN?
Yeah, about they talked about that being the match because that was going to be
that was the match. Yes. That was the match. So I really thought that if they were going to do a sub and it was going to be the main event and it's a weak main event and everything, it should have been Okada. Number one, Okada beat Kenny Omega last year at All Out on the biggest show of the year. Number two, if you want to do a bunch of, you know, Okada's always in the mix. He's always protected. And you want to do, you know, video package and things like that. You can say this guy beat Kenny Omega and he's Kenny Omega's biggest career rival. And, you know, it's an all-time legendary match. So I think that, you know, I would have done that. On the flip side, they want to make a younger guy into a pay-per-view main eventer. And this was a chance to do it. And Tony, obviously, is very high on Kevin Knight. And, you know, do I think Okada would have done more business? Yeah, I do. Is that necessarily the long-term goal, doing a little bit more business with Okada? Maybe people not saying, oh, it's such a nothing pay-per-view, blah, 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 blah. Which, as far as when if you look at the lineup, I mean, it's anything but a nothing pay-per-view. It's going to be absolutely, when you look at that lineup from start to finish, it's going to be like every other pay-per-view. It's going to be a series of outstanding matches. But, you know, I mean, as far as the decision-making, you know, they did this last year with Fletcher. It's like sometimes you sacrifice a buy rate a little bit and because you're building for the long haul. And if that's the goal and you want to tell people that, yeah, Kevin Knight's going to lose, he's probably going to lose a great match. Hopefully with Kenny in the ring with him, that he will come out better losing than he came in to the thing. And it's better in the long run, whereas with Okada, he's already there. So, that's the decision-making process.
All right, the entire Don Callis family comes down, and the gist of it is that Kevin Knight basically celebrated that he had broken Kyle's record of TNT title defenses here on this show, and he said, I did it without the family. So Kyle gets all pissed off, and he basically says, you know what, I can do it without the family as well, so no one from the family will be at ringside on Sunday for my match, and you know what? No one's going to be at ringside for my match tonight either, so get the hell out of here. So it was Protocod and Brodito, no family members at ringside. And in fact, at the end, Brody took out Okada, Bandito hit the 21-plex, and pinned Kyle. So Kyle, without the family, lost, and he's going into Sunday's match with Bandito, having just put the guy over. So,
well, I mean, that was the right booking, too.
None of these family members like each other, that's what I've determined here.
Yeah, and Callis goes in there and thinks it's healthy competition and everything. Those first two matches were both really great. Man, Darby's insane anyway, but that was a great match. And then the tag match. There was a spot in that tag match when Brody King does that monkey flip spot, and he was going to do it onto Fletcher, who's on his back, which is like, they've used it to win their matches in the past. He does that monkey flip spot, Bandito's in the air, and Okada hits that drop kick out of nowhere. What an amazing spot that was. So, great match. And, the right thing. And, you know, I mean, we saw enough in this match. The one thing is that I do not expect Bandito to beat Kyle Fletcher. However, you know, as far as will they have a great match, I'm reasonably confident that they're going to have a killer match. So there you go.
We had a Mick Foley interview with Tekla and Willow, and this was fine, but it went way too long. It was one of those interviews where it's just you say your thing, and then I'll say my thing without saying anything, and then you say your thing, and then I say my thing. And eventually they got upset at each other, and Foley had to get between them. And then Foley kind of put over Willow a little bit, and then Tekla told him to shut up. And Tekla basically said, I never thought I'd hear you call me a dumb bitch, Willow, but on Sunday, when I'm standing on top of you, you better remember to smile anyway. So she slaps Willow. Foley tries to get between him again. Tekla hits Willow with the mic. She flips off Mick, gets in the ring, and then Willow pounces her out of the ring and sends her packing. So it wasn't bad. It just would have done much better with probably several minutes cut off of it.
Yeah, but they need to build to where they were going. They couldn't rush it. I mean, the other way would have rushed it, and you had Foley out there, and I think they wanted...
No, you don't have to rush it, but like they didn't have to go back and forth six times. They could have gone back and forth three times, for example.
Well,
they were out there for a long time, and the crowd was not super into it.
I thought the crowd was plenty into it, and... They had Foley out there, and they, you know, there's a lot of the thing where Foley's standing there, you know, like when Tekla's beating on, it's like Foley's standing there with the idea of like, what do I do? I can't really attack these people. I thought that was like a really interesting thing. And then he's trying to make the decision, and then boom, you know, Will gives her the pounce, so he doesn't have to make the move or make the decision. So there's a little bit of stories in there too. Tekla's great. I'm expecting Willow to win, but I'll say this, man. I mean, making Tekla champion was probably controversial at the time. Maybe not to him. I thought it was an interesting move, you know, and I thought that, man, she has hit it out of the park, and she has really become a star. And Willow's the most popular of the women, and Willow and Mercedes does make the most sense for the biggest show of the year. So I would expect Willow to win because it makes the most sense. But, I think Tekla can always be in that mix. They got another star there. So that's a good thing.
Clark Connors and Jay White. Crowd was completely dead when this match started. They didn't
They were dead at certain points in the match, especially at they were very into Jay. Then they were, the match was, I don't know. I did not think Jay looked good at all.
This was his first singles match in almost 2 years, and they had a very simple match. The most basic match you've ever seen.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, like, and again, there can be a million reasons for this, but, you know, I mean, Jay had that great, great physique for years and years and years, and his body looks completely different. And you know, there's there can be a lot of different reasons. Maybe he's got injuries that he can't lift on. Who knows what else? I don't like whatever. But the difference, like when he came back, I thought like, man, you know, he's wearing a long sleeve shirt, and it's like he's trying to hide, and it's like, man, I think he's like a lot smaller. And then he comes out there, and he's small, which is not a kiss of death. Will's small, you know, Will's smaller, and he's doing great. And Jay is a very smart wrestler, and he did in the end, you know, they in the end get over, but the match got over to a degree. I thought Connors did most everything. Jay did a few things at the end, but when I watched it, I felt like, man, maybe he has to ease back into this thing, you know, get back his ring shape or whatever. But this was not the Jay White, you know, again, this was not the Jay White that I've seen in the past. could he, you know, he's young, could he still be that Jay White? Hopefully, yeah. But, you know, I mean, I was, by the standards of Jay White, and that's our very high standards, this wasn't him.
So he won with a bridging guillotine, and then he hits a Blade Runner after the match. Then Finley comes down, lays him out with a shillelagh. The Bang 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 Gang comes down to make the save. And later, they make a challenge for a double dog collar match at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, so it's Connors and Finley against Juice and Jay in a double dog collar match. It'll be a bloodbath. For sure.
We had, by the way, you know, speaking of bloodbaths, this next match was not. Sisters of Sin and Divine Dominion. So this actually kind of suffered from...
Sky was bleeding the whole match.
I know, but barely. I mean, there was a little bit of blood on her head. But the point is, like, as far as, you know, AEW, when they announce a stip match, I mean, they usually over-deliver. And this one didn't at all. It was a hardcore match. There was one spot where Sky Blue allegedly got stabbed with a screwdriver and she cut herself and bled a little bit. But, like, there was a table spot, a couple of cane shots, some trash can shots. Heat was kind of hit and miss. And then in the end, there was a double choke slam on Julia after they put Sky through a table outside and they got the pin. So that was that. It was... I mean, by AEW hardcore match standards, it was incredibly vanilla.
It was very tame by AEW standards, yeah.
Yes.
I thought the match was there. I don't think it like when I compare it to Megan Bain and Lena Cross's match with Thunder Rosa and Olympia, you know, not even close. You know, the interesting thing that some people talked about politically is that AEW talent, you know, has on this show have championships in other parts of the world, and obviously Julia Hart and Sky Blue just won the trios titles in Stardom, and then they got beat on AEW television tonight, which to me, again, in that sense, didn't expect different. I don't think it's a big tragedy. They didn't lose a trios match, you know. If they lost a trios match, you know, you could argue, you know, it's probably not a good thing. Losing a tag match, it's a different thing. So I didn't really have a problem with that. Later one, you know, you can argue, and I will argue about. But yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to them with the Brawling Birds, and man, did you see the Brawling Birds match on Collision?
Who they wrestle?
It was just squash, basically.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
They were so aggressive. It was awesome. Like for a 2-minute squash, you know, it's like they were great. So, you know, that's the big one. That's clearly the big one.
We had the challenge for the dog collar match. We'll go over the card for the show here in a second. And then the main event was Kenny and Will and Moxley versus Hechicero, Jake Doyle, and Brian Cage. So obviously nobody thought the heels had any chance of winning. So instead, the match was all about the story of Will and Moxley, who can get along. Kenny is friendly with Will, but is mostly just tolerating him at this point. He's irritated. And Kenny wants nothing to do with Moxley. And so that's the dynamic of the entire match. Although later, Kenny and Moxley did end up tagging and getting in there and working together. And then we had a spot where Will and Moxley were doing the Death Rider corner-to-corner train spot. And then Kenny demanded he be let in. And so he joined them. And then they tried a boot into a German spot, but Mox actually either missed by a mile or Kenny suplexed the guy too early, but he missed. And then Kenny tried a V-trigger and hit Moxley. And then Moxley ends up returning. All three babyfaces isolate Hechicero, and we got a Hidden Blade V-trigger for the win. So the babyfaces win, but then Moxley's upset at Kenny afterwards. You hit me with a V-trigger. Kenny says it was an accident. So Kenny and Will end up getting into a shoving match over Kenny getting angry at Moxley. The Bucks run down. Moxley shoves Matt. Nick attacks Moxley. I believe Will accidentally hit Kenny. There was a lot going on here. Mm-hmm. And then the Don Callis family hit the ring, and Kenny wiped out Trent and Rocky, but then Kevin Knight flew in out of nowhere, hit him with a belt shot, and
bloodied him up.
Yep, posed with the belts over Kenny's body. as the show went off the air. So again, you know, this is what you got to do with a weak challenger. They gave him a big win over a former champion, and they had him lay out the current champion and stand over him at the end of the show. Got to do the best you can.
I thought that the spot itself, I mean, Kevin like comes out of nowhere with that belt shot. It was like, I thought that really made the build. I mean, whether it will pay off or not, you know, I mean, it's just a question of, in the end of the day, it's, everyone knows the big show was August 30th. This is a show that if you're kind of hit and miss on AEW pay-per-views, it is one that you'll pass up. If you're someone who's going to go like, man, every AEW pay-per-view this year, it's like none of them are worth missing, then you probably won't miss this one either. You know, this is basically, it's basically your, the battle of AEW's goodwill this year from putting on so many good shows versus, you know, the fact that WrestleMania is coming up and we got this show before and we don't even have Elimination Chamber matches. It's just the February show and after the Rumble, you know, and that's what this is, you know. I mean, it's a great action show, you know, whether it'll do big numbers, I don't know. So the one thing in this match is the choice. You know, Edge Starr is the CMLL world champion, and you know, different, you know, this been so different companies, you know, have different opinions, values, and everything when it comes to champions losing. Like if it was Yoda Tsuji and he was in this match, New Japan would really, I mean, it's a trios match, not a singles match, but they would probably prefer that their champion doesn't get pinned. And again, in this situation with the three, I mean, you had Jake Doyle in there, you know? I mean, you had Brian Cage in there. I mean, you can beat any of them. And, you know, CML is your partner. And granted, like, the world heavyweight champion in CMLL is not the same as the world heavyweight champion in AEW politically. The champion in CMLL that means the most is whatever belt Mystico has, which right now is a CMLL light heavyweight. So beating him, you know, they might balk at that one, you know, and just, you know, please don't beat our top guy. Hitch Sarah's not their top guy. Nevertheless, when you have the choice of the three, I wouldn't have chosen the CMLL world champion. Just felt in this situation, you know, if it was Okada, Kyle Fletcher, and Hechicero? Yes. It's not, you know. So anyway, that's my thoughts there.
All right, here's the deal with this weekend. So yes, Mystico was never announced for the show, but Tony Khan went on X and said that Mystico was injured. So therefore,
that's the CMLL angle. I'm the CMLL angle from last Friday.
So therefore, he said, he thought that he would hopefully be ready for next month's Grand Slam Mexico, which actually is in two weeks.
Isn't it next week?
2 weeks.
You're right, 2 weeks. Yeah, okay, yeah.
And he said that he would have been a great challenger for the winner of Saturday's match between Fletcher and Bandido. And so as a result of all of this, there is a six-way ladder match on Sunday, and the winner gets a future international title shot. Four names were pulled by, quote, luck of the draw, which are Jack Perry, Mortos, Commander, and Mike Bailey.
So should mention, Mortos and Clone both got their visas approved.
Yes, and so Saturday's collision will have Nick Wayne versus AR Fox and Leo Rush versus Clone. The winners of those matches are also going to be in the ladder match.
Yep.
So well, there you go.
Probably be an outstanding ladder match.
Now here is the full card for Sunday. We got Kenny Omega, Kevin Knight for the AEW title. Talked about that. Kyle Fletcher, Bandido, international title. Chris Jericho and Tommaso Ciampa, no DQ. Painmaker versus Psycho Killer match. We got Mark Davis and Andrade for the national title.
I think Andrade should win that one.
I think that would be foolish to not do.
Agreed.
We got Christian Cage and Copeland versus the Death Riders, AEW tag team titles. Pac and Claudio.
Pac and Claudio.
They did attack on the show tonight.
Yeah, they got to have Edge and Christian win, or Adam and Christian win and face the Young Bucks at Wembley, or in a three-way at Wembley with FTR coming back. I mean,
that makes things very weird because we got the Young Bucks facing Will Ospreay and Jon Moxley.
I know it's a real weird booking one. I mean, you can do a thing where, you know, Ospreay and Moxley have an issue, and somehow it costs them the match, because it's like, this is not the time you would want to beat the Young Bucks. However, if the idea is that the Young Bucks are going to beat Copeland and Christian, they could lose here because they're going to get the win later. And they could just lose because, you know, Moxley and Ospreay are bigger stars. You could do it that way. But I think that having kind of like the build up, the dissension and everything like that might be a way to go too. I mean, it will be interesting. The one thing is that that match will probably be, I mean, I just remember that Young Bucks with Will Ospreay and Swerve match. I mean, that's one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen. I think this match will be just outstanding.
Then we have got Tekla Willow Nightingale, AEW Women's title, Hikaru Shida and Maya World for the TBS title. The Dogs against Jay White and Juice, double chain match. And then we've got the six-way ladder matches noted. And on the pre-show, there will be a celebration of the Rougeau family. So that's coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, the ticket sales are weak. They're right around six right now. So it is what it is. You know, it's Montreal. They've never been strong in Montreal. There you go.
So Collision Saturday has Tekla and Hikaru Shida versus Willow and Maya World, and also the two Redemption ladder match qualifiers. All right, before we go, I want to mention, at least from NXT, that the main event was Naraku versus Tony D. And, in fact, Tony D beat him again. And he beat him. And then after it was over, we had the NXT debut of that guy, who is Santana. But it looks like he's probably going to be getting a new name in WWE. Which is fascinating because he has worked many WWE shows as Mike Santana. But I guess we've got to...
He has no reason to have a new name.
No, it's ridiculous.
I mean, and it's funny because Vince isn't even there anymore. So you can't blame this one on Vince.
Yeah, I can't explain this one, but hey, listen, maybe he'll get Mike Santana, but man, they went out of their way to not call that guy Santana.
He needs to sing a song, and once he has an established song, they won't change his name. I know a gold medal's not good enough, but a song is definitely good enough. So that's what you got to do.
Or if you're a social media star, then they don't change your name either.
What social media star?
Logan Paul?
Well, obviously Logan Paul. You know, of course Logan Paul you're not. I'm talking about, like, you know.
You say of course, but like they've changed the names of Olympians.
Oh, yeah, but you can't. Tamara Mintz's stock is not as famous as Logan Paul. I mean, you couldn't. It's like, oh, are they going to change Tom? They're not going to change Tom Brady's name.
I sure hope not.
Oh, there's 0% chance.
Sure hope not.
They won't. They're, you know, I mean, Tamara Mintz's stock, like the reality is she's not a household name.
She's not, but you know what? You shouldn't.
No, I mean, I agree with you.
You shouldn't change any Olympian's name, especially if their gimmick is that they're an Olympian.
Well, they did with Chad Gable. They did with Chad Gable.
I know, that's stupid.
With Tavion Heights.
It's ridiculous. You know? All of them.
You know? Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. Freaking Kurt Hennig's son.
You know, Dave, they did a WWE film. I just learned about this. They did a WWE film in like 2017 that starred Shawn Michaels and Willie Nelson. Okay? Mm-hmm. Willie Nelson.
Did they change Willie Nelson's name?
No, he played himself. Because why would you give him another name? Some people, they should just play themselves when they become professional wrestlers. If you're going to give the person the gimmick that they're who they are, then they should keep their name. That's what I think.
Well, I agree. I mean, I completely agree on that. It's whatever, but no, of course, Mike Santana, it's like he's an established name. Much of the people know who he is, you know, so changing his name, I mean, it serves no purpose. I mean, you know, licensing, whatever, it's like you can work that out. They didn't change CM Punk's name, and you know, he did fine, and they all made money licensing.
Should also note that Naraku, you know, there's been all this speculation that Hiromu was going to come in, and they just trademarked another name, another Japanese name, and still nothing. So I don't know what's going on.
Still nothing. Nope.
Visa issues?
Could be. Could be. Yeah.
I guess we'll have to find out.
That's actually very possible in this climate. You know, it can take months to get that stuff done.
All right, everybody, we got to wrap it up for today. Dave and I are going to be back on Sunday after the Redemption show. We'll go through all the match and everything like that. Dave and Garrett will be up on Friday. There's a new Observer up on Friday and a lot of stuff. So check all that out. And that's it. We'll talk to you again after a while.